approval of the minutes. Did everybody have a chance to look at the minutes?
A motion for approval.
Is a motion and a second? Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Okay, public comment, excuse me, on topics not on this agenda. I don't see anyone. Any disclosures and recusals? No? Okay. So our organizational meeting, we did a lot of organizational work in June, so we have selection of chair and vice chair on the agenda this evening. So the floor is open for nominations for chair. Just is there a second?
I'll second.
There's a nomination and a second. Are there any other nominations? Any other nominations? One more time, any other nominations? Is there a motion to close nominations and select a chair?
I would make that motion.
Is the motion to close nominations and select a chair? And a second? Any discussion?
Ann's doing a great job.
Oh, thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, motion carried. All right. Floor is open for nominations for a vice chair.
I'd like to make a motion for Ken Street.
Okay, there's a motion to nominate Ken, who happens to not be here this evening.
I will second that motion.
Okay, there's a second. Any other nominations? Any other nominations? And I don't know why they always want you to do it three times. Any other nominations? Okay, is there a motion to close nominations and select a vice chair?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second to close nominations and select a vice chair. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Okay, so we have Kovich and Street. Chair and vice chair. So thank you very much for the vote of confidence. I appreciate it. Okay, new business. Item G1, we have reconsideration of the Spade Street speed humps. So is staff here to talk about this?
Yes, maybe I'll, as Drew makes his way up, apologize for bringing this back to you and to the neighborhood and to traffic engineering. But as our staff looked at this, we realized we should have been more adamant in bringing this to your attention. This is on a route that we are having issues with on-time performance for a variety of reasons, including spacing out of bus stops, other issues, and so we're concerned that this will cause that route more challenges. And Drew is going to give you a full report, but I just wanted to say we are mindful that we are going to try to avoid this so that it doesn't happen again, but given the critical nature of this street. Drew?
Yeah, I don't know how full this is going to be, but I echo what Chuck just said. We kind of got in a little late with this one, and I apologize for kind of my lack of due diligence on it at the time. And sorry to drag you up here, Tom. But anyway, as Chuck said, this definitely affects, what is this stuff? I had this open even.
Welcome back.
I don't know if you can see Route 3 there on the screens. Crazy. I had this up and running. There we go. Let's just leave it at that. The route connects the east and the west transfer points, travels through kind of the near east side neighborhoods, Olbrich, State Jennifer up to the square, then heads west towards the west transfer point. It operates in both directions, of course. It operates all day on weekdays, and it's a long route. When we first put the transfer point system into effect, it was not exactly loose, but it wasn't a real tight schedule on the route. But as time's gone by, more ridership and different factors have served to slow it down a little bit. So now it's schedule adherence isn't nearly what it used to be. And we looked at some of the data from our on-time performance monitoring system. And Route 3 is coming in on the west transfer point about 9% of the time. It is actually coming in after the pulse, which means, you know, conceivably a lot of people may have just missed transfers. The east side is more like 4%, the east transfer point, when it gets there. We also saw it kind of scooting in at the last second during parts of the day, like in the middle of the day. You know, it's getting in there in time, but it's only got a minute or two to spare. So it's a tight route. Back in 2016, we asked the commission to look at thinning out the bus stops along Jennifer Street, which are currently every block and 660 feet apart, essentially. And then it was not approved. And during the reconstruction, when we were going to thin out the stops, or when we wanted to thin out the stops, the street also got narrowed by 2 feet when it reopened. And that has the effect of, when you've got parking on both sides of the street, the lanes become very narrow, especially in the winter. And if you're in this, you know, 8.5-foot wide bus and you're approaching vehicle coming the other way, chances are you're going to have to slide over as far as you can to the side and stop before you can get moving again once the vehicle passes you. And so Jennifer Street itself has slowed us down a little bit. And then last year for the Monroe Street reconstruction, they put speed tables in kind of on the southwest end of it here. See, I got my little, if you can see my little arrow
there.
That's
very helpful, yeah.
And they aren't quite as restricted for us as the speed humps, the shorter speed humps. So they don't affect us quite as much. But so the route is just kind of gradually over time evolved, so it's operating slower. And its on-time performance is suffering accordingly. So we the best of all possible worlds would be if there wasn't going to be speed humps on State Street. That would be the best outcome for us. I understand the neighbors. I can see their concerns. There's the school right there, and there's a lot of traffic at times of the day, especially when parents are dropping their kids off. So that's where we're at. I did want to point one thing out in reference to communication from, I think his name is Mr. Latimer. He mentioned that there was a test back in 2001 of a bus on speed humps and, you know, trying to figure out the proper width of them, I guess you'd say. And I asked around to see if anybody remembered that test. And what you do?
I was the alder at the time.
Okay. And I think one of the things we were looking for was how they affect, how speed humps, you know, riding over the speed hump affects somebody that's secured in a mobility device in the bus. We wanted to see how much, you know, rock people around. And at the time, we, you know, we concluded that if you're going slow enough, they're not bad. And but again, you're slowing down and then speeding back up, and it does have an effect on the quality of passengers' rides. So I don't know if you've got questions for me.
Can you review the what we're looking at with TE to do in terms
yes.
of?
Yeah. This is absolutely insane. What is all that stuff? I'm really sorry. I had this running. Here we go. There we go. And this, I think, is in your packet. These are the three proposed locations for the speed humps. East of Baldwin Street, you've got one kind of at the, what would that be, the south? East corner of the school there, you know, the big play area, and then you've got two of them between Dickinson and Spade Street. Is what's being proposed. I don't know if Tom wants to add any more detail or not.
Yeah, Tom, can you talk a little bit about the history and what's happened here? Because we approved this these speed humps already as part of the neighborhood traffic management program. So can you please just refresh everybody's memory about what happened, if you would, please, Tom?
For State Street, the complaint kind of focused around Dickinson Street, that intersection.
The mic's not on.
So our original plan was to put one speed hump between Baldwin and Dickinson. And that fit in. And then additionally, the complaint was closer to the school, vehicle speeding, especially during pickup and drop off of the school. But on that block, the block east of Dickinson, the driveway spacing is so narrow that the only place we could put a speed hump is what is shown there. So that's why we didn't put more further east. Further to the west and west of Baldwin, there are existing speed humps. And in one block, there's two speed humps on one block. So the residents on this block, between Baldwin and Dickinson, use the argument, if there's two speed humps on the block further west, why shouldn't we have two speed humps? So I looked at it closer and found some driveway spacing that we could fit in two speed humps, so that's how we came up with this design here. And this is the plan that went to the residents, and they approved this plan by a vote of 20 in favor and 6 opposed. So that's the history behind State Street.
So you are at what point right now, ready to construct?
This is right now in the traffic calming contract. We have a contractor. They plan on constructing these probably in September or October of this year. So if we were to make a change, we would just make a change to that contract and fairly simple to make the change.
And can you remind me, during our conversation with Yang, the compromise we asked was to reduce it from 3 to
2.
To 2.
Yep.
Okay.
So is that what Metro's asking for this evening?
Yeah, that would be our hoped for compromise. Yeah.
Which 2?
Which one?
Well,
we're looking to reduce 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which one would go, or would you move them all around, Tom? Or
So I think we would remove, instead of having the two between Baldwin and Dickinson, we would have one kind of centered right in the center of that block. There is enough space between driveways to get it right in the center of that block.
Yeah, to go along with that.
Okay, so we're far along in the process. So obviously we have to consider the neighborhood traffic management program. We've approved it once already. There are concerns with regard to the bus route, and I know those concerns need to be certainly weighed as well. Metro is asking for a change that would leave some speed humps, but still allow them some ability to remain better in terms of meeting their schedule. So comments or questions from the group? Okay, so let's go Grant, Jessica, Gary. Or you want to go Gary, Jessica, Grant?
Hi, Gary.
Okay. Just to refresh my memory, approximately how many streets do we have that Metro runs on that have speed humps? Not the tables, but speed humps.
Probably, I can think of three right off the top of my head.
It's not many. It's less than five.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jessica, then Grant.
I apologize if you already talked.
You turned your mic off.
Just leave it. Just leave it on.
Yeah, you're on.
I apologize if you already talked about this earlier, but I think I heard that one of the issues with the on-time performance is the number of stops on Jennifer Street currently. Is that currently in? And I guess, has there been any consideration of that as a compromise as well?
No, because it's still pretty fresh in our mind, and we had at least at a public meeting that we had over in the neighborhood 100 to 150 people oppose it, and the commission was very clear, our members here, they can speak to that, that having the stops every block is what we needed to do for now. As time goes on and we collect this on-time performance data, we quite frankly, when we feel confident that we can come back and point out that we need to revisit it, we want to be sure, very, very confident that's related to the bus stops, then we would bring that back. But that's not what we wanted to do here. We just wanted to try to avoid one of these speed bumps.
Okay. If I have additional questions, should I circle back around after? Okay. This is more just for informational purposes, but can you remind me for the process for the speed humps, is it the residents on that block, or is it, so I guess I'm thinking also about the trade-off between people on Jennifer Street wanting more, or, you know, whatever streets along the route wanting more stops versus the contingent on a specific block that's asking about speed humps. Is it just the residents on the one block that have to approve the one? Okay.
Grant?
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Tom, do you know were, and I'm guessing the answer is no, but were there any other traffic calming interventions considered for this area? I'm thinking especially on the block east of Dickinson, where there's no parking on the school side, where it's just extraordinarily wide. Was there any thought about bump outs and narrowing that street as instead of a speed hump? And was there any thoughts for a four-way stop there as well? I know the school's asked for that because it's a challenging spot for kids to cross as well.
I know we've had the request for a four-way stop there. I don't think we've ever done an all-way stop study. That's something that we could do. Unlikely that it would qualify or meet the warrants. So I think that's what I expressed to the resident and then kind of decided to move forward with speed humps. Looked at a traffic circle at the intersection, and that doesn't really work out with bus turning movements because of how just how narrow the intersection is. It's hard to fit in a traffic circle that would work. So that's the reason that we went with the speed humps. But
in terms of narrowing, I mean,
yeah, we didn't
like 34 feet. That's I don't know if that's just for the speed home, so then maybe like 38 feet curb to curb on the one block, and that's, if you only have parking on one side, I mean, it's not surprising to me that it's has speeding issues with that, and it's all just a green field on the left as well. So in terms of instigating people to really step on it, and I've commuted through here regularly for many years, and I would say there is a people turn off of Williamston to Baldwin and then come through here. So it's a particular kind of driver that's using it as a shortcut. And, you know, I know stop signs are not meant as traffic calming devices and they're not meant to control speed, but they certainly are a deterrent for people that are using the streets for cut through. So I think I'm really sensitive to what Metro is talking about. I think we really need to invest in having good bus service, and I think this is part of it. And so I guess I'm wondering and hoping if we could think about some other tactics to help the neighbors out that aren't necessarily speed humps.
How would that work? I'm just going to follow up on Grant's question. How would that work in the process? Because it's already been through the neighborhood traffic management program once. Have we had a situation like this before?
No. And looking at bump outs, the issue that always comes up with bump outs is the sort of the inlets and the drainage. It becomes a bigger project because we would have to move or somehow modify to accommodate the water drainage into the inlets, and there are inlets at this intersection.
I think it's just also an opportunity. I mean, you can imagine, you know, eight feet for the entire course of that block, actually two blocks, where we could have it all be massive rain gardens, you know, instead of just concrete today, that my hunch is it would have a really positive effect on calming traffic and no bad implications for bus riders. I guess to your question, Ann, too, I mean, this is something we've talked about a few times, is the overall traffic calming or management program. And to me, it's very problematic that we have such a separate program where there's a process for speed humps, and then all the rest of it doesn't really have a process. And so, I mean, in terms of what we could do, we could certainly, you know, put a pause on putting these in and look at other options. I mean, even though it was approved, I guess it's on here for reconsideration. So I'm assuming we have the ability to say we'd like to put it on pause and investigate other options. I don't know.
Okay.
Another question, and it would be for you. Refresh my memory. On Spade Street between Baldwin and Dickinson, is there parking on both sides?
Yes.
Okay.
Bridget.
Yeah, I vaguely recall the conversation almost a year ago where we reviewed these projects. What I don't remember is what the other alternatives that the city looks at other than speed humps. I know talked about other kinds of traffic calming devices, but are there any others like speed cushions or like using detectable warning devices, those sorts of things that the city could look at that wouldn't have the same effect on, you know, a bus's system, but would still be effective to deter speeding of motorists?
So right now, in our toolbox is speed humps, traffic circles at the intersections, bump outs, and traffic calming islands.
That's it.
It's basically what we do to try to slow traffic, but speed humps are, I would say, by far the most effective at slowing traffic. The issue with putting the islands in or the bump outs is that it helps pedestrians cross, but it doesn't really slow traffic that much.
Couple questions. The first one is, so if you determine that one speed hump was fine for the east side, What would be the downside of going down to one between Baldwin and Dickinson? Would it be less effective?
Yeah, we like to, our ideal spacing is 300 feet between the speed humps because that doesn't give people a chance to accelerate. And if there's space around 300 feet, then people kind of go around 25 miles an hour. So that was the reason for that, but I think one would be effective. It's not a real long block, and there is parking on both sides. So.
And so given the options of moving from two to one or some of these other ideas like exploring other options, what would be the relative delays of doing those things? If you were to go to one speed bump, could you do that pretty much without any delay? Versus how long might it take to consider other options?
If we go down to one speed hump in that block, that would be something that we would very easy to do. And we would do it, so we would still install the speed humps with this contract this summer/fall. I think anything else, we would put this on hold, and it would have to wait until next year.
Okay. Another question from Metro. So if the idea is to – the idea of the speed humps is to keep the speed along these two blocks down to some reasonable speed. I don't know how much it would slow down the buses, but I would think if it's 15 or 20 miles an hour, how much time are you really losing by going at that speed for these two blocks?
I would just answer it. As a regular Route 3 rider, talking to drivers, that number one, it is something that's an inconvenience if we're going across them at the speed limit, and so we're slowing down even more. And so our sense is operationally that will slow down the on-time performance. As Drew said, we're having a 9% late at the west transfer point. And a 4% late at the east transfer point, that those numbers will be get worse. And we're looking for ways, how do we address this? And so that's one of the reasons we came back. We said we've got to try to address this so we can keep the service on this portion of the VO3. The other portion along Williamson Street and Atwood, there aren't speed bumps. That moves pretty quickly from what I've heard, but this doesn't, and the speed bumps are problematic, but we'd like to try to reduce it to one. We think that will help the on-time performance.
I mean, it feels to me like a small piece in what's a much bigger problem. So,
problem for Metro, Chris?
Yeah, the on-time problem seems much bigger than this. So,
I don't know if you want me to answer that, but
yes.
Yeah, Route 3 is a long route, and so its on-time performance is not as good as some of the other core routes. We don't have any slack in that schedule anymore. But you're right. There's other routes that have on-time performance issues as well. But 3 is a standard core route that connects on both ends at the transfer points, and where people are relying on it to transfer to other routes to get to work or whatever on time.
Other questions?
Yeah.
No?
I guess I follow up a little bit, and I agree with Chris on the on-time issue. And I'm trying to think this through as east to west. And I guess I'm not totally opposed to cutting back to one speed hump. But I don't know if that's going to make a difference, that big a difference. I think back to your comment about Jennifer Street. I think that's really seriously got to be looked at. If that on-time performance is struggling, that, to me, is one that should be at the top of the list to look at to revisit that fairly soon. That's my mind, in my mind.
You still have a little battle fatigue, but you're probably right.
Yeah.
Still got ringing in my ears.
There'll be lots of opposition to that.
Sure.
But thinking about the commuter who relies on that transfer.
Yes.
That they may or may not appear when it comes time to discuss bus stops on Jennifer Street, but we've got to keep them in mind as the overall route and the overall service of the whole system. Mm-hmm. So back to this question now, do we go from leave it as is or having one on that block? I hope our buses drivers don't speed on this street. There is no doubt they do have to slow way down below 20 when they come to these speed humps, both for the driver, the comfort of the passengers, as well as the wear and tear on the buses. So mm-hmm. Do they accelerate? I don't know. But I don't know. I guess I'm comfortable with the compromise of reducing to one hump at this time, but I still go back that if we're looking at time, I think we need to
think of some other things.
Take some look at some other things, including Jennifer Street.
Grant?
To that question about time and really about spacing of stops, I wonder if we should ask the Transportation Policy and Planning Board to kind of wrestle with that question and look at it, adopting some sort of a policy that might help Metro, because I know this, I mean, this has been a very contentious issue, I mean, particularly on Jennifer Street, but it's come up, I mean, we voted on one here, I think, on Dickinson it was, I believe, and so maybe this is an example of something that the commission should ask for the TPPP to dig into a little bit and come back with the recommendation. In terms of this project, I'm not sure if this is feasible or not, Tom, or what happens if you went from 3 to 1, but I guess one other alternative would be to go from the 2 to 1 on between Baldwin and Dickinson mid block, and then hold on the one that's east of Dickinson to look at some of those other questions. And I mean, I even wonder what it would, putting barrels out there to narrow the street and do some speed studies to see if there is an appreciable difference with a street narrowing. And I don't know what neighbors would feel about if they feel like they only got one and they thought they were getting three, but that might be another way to move forward with something and not put the whole thing on hold.
I think the proposal is to have two speed humps, one in the middle of the block and the second one.
Right, so I was putting another option.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just okay. Doing the one that's mid-block between Baldwin and Dickinson.
Have one instead of, okay.
Because that I think the other opportunities are more likely between Dickinson and Rogers or Dickinson and Thornton. The block between Baldwin and Dickinson, I think, is, either going to have a speed hump there or not.
Okay.
So I don't know, Tom, if that would still, I'm assuming you could take two of them out and still put the project forward, and then what would it take if we wanted to come back later, you did some studying and said, no, we want to put that one last speed hump in, is that a major deal to include in, like, next year's management program, for example?
Yeah, we could do that. We might even be able to look back at those other options, and if we rule those out, there might still be enough time to put in that one back this year, because when we talked to the contractor, it sounded like, for this location, we wanted to get these speed humps in by the start of school, so I guess that would be the timing of it, that if we were to put this one in on the
east of Dickinson, we want to get that figured out by the start of school. So we could hold off on it, and then it could go in next year with the contract next year.
So we could do the one this year and then potentially add some next year, either put one or two this year and then hold off.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not – I mean, I don't want to, you know, speak for your department and how feasible it is, but I know – and Director Lynch is here, but we've done a little – we've done more of testing stuff out, you know, temporary closures, changes, those sorts of things, and this feels like that might be an opportunity to try some things out on the east of Dickinson. But I don't want to, you know, it'd be good to get confirmation if that is something that you think is feasible. Or
yeah, I think that's something we would probably go back and look at. I don't know if I can answer it right now, what the design would look like or the test would look like.
I'd like to suggest that I agree with Grant, if you put that into a motion.
So I would
probably second it.
I have to wait till everybody has comments. So can I have just one? I just want to ask from Metro's point of view. So two things, one from Metro's point of view and one from the neighborhood's point of view. So if we went with one speed hump mid-block or one speed hump there and one speed hump there, so either one or two, would that work for Metro? That would work better than three, but would it be a reasonable alternative for Metro?
I'd say yes. I mean, quite candidly, when we sat down with TE, we asked the question that's being discussed here. Is it reasonable to go from three to one or three to two?
Mm-hmm.
And we just felt since we were late, we could get one, it was kind of a pragmatic compromise. What I'm hearing is another way to go that I think would help our chances of getting good on-time performance.
Okay. And from the neighborhood's point of view, Tom, so they're not here. We've gotten some email feedback from the neighborhood saying we want the speed humps. We should actually have more than three. So, you know, we've heard from several people that they're in favor of them. So how do you think the neighbors would view going to two or to one, with the understanding that more could be added later if it doesn't help the problem?
Right, that's the question. I don't know how they would. I know the residents that I've talked to want two on the block between Baldwin and Dickinson, and they wanted more than one on the block east of Dickinson, but because of the driveway space, we couldn't do that. So my hunch is they're not going to like going to one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know what else we could come up with on that block east of Dickinson, so it's hard to say.
Chris?
So given that point, it sounds like going to one could create a problem where you can only ever have one. You can't go back to doing the two, right? Because you've now put one probably somewhere in the middle or something.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I'm curious how Metro would feel about the two between Baldwin and Dickinson and using east of Dickinson as a more of a test case for other ideas.
So we put two over there and then skip the one on the
far. Don't worry about, don't do anything east of Dickinson yet.
Just to clarify, so we're talking about
Yeah.
Just want to make sure. I'm not sure how we put that in a motion, but I want to make sure we're all on the same page.
I have a question also. So what exactly is posed to the residents of the street? Is it to when they, I guess, vote on whether or not to have speed humps, are they voting on whether or not to have a specific recommendation from TE that has already, you know, like the three in this case, or are they just saying we'd like speed humps at the discretion of or at the recommendation of TE? I guess my question here is,
you mean did they vote on having these three? Or
yeah,
they
exactly. Or are they saying, hey, we recognize that there's some latitude in a recommendation from city staff, and you know, I guess part of my concern is that what is, we talked a little bit about what is the process and what is the precedent for having already approved a very concrete plan. I'm very sympathetic to the on-time performance, and I think it is an issue. I really like the idea of having this referred to the Transportation Policy and Planning Board, because I think it is a concern to continue to have speed humps put on metro routes. And so, but given that this has already been approved, I mean, what really are, what are the ramifications of changing this at this stage? I don't know.
So the survey that we sent to residents had this design, and what we say is that it's a preliminary design, and things can change.
Okay.
But this is what they're expecting.
Okay.
I think in the past, the main reason for saying that is because when you get out in the field and you see where driveway spacing is, you might have to move, like a speed hump might not fit between these two driveways, and we might have to move it to this location just so. So people don't vote because they don't want the speed hump in front of their house. They want it in front of their neighbor's house. So
they voted on three speed humps.
They voted on three speed humps, with this being a preliminary design.
Great.
In terms of the program, would you have any issues if the furthest east one were postponed for this season, and then just determine that actually that's going to be the best thing we can do, and we want to go ahead with that next year with that third one. There wouldn't be any issues with needing to go back and revote or anything like that, right? I'm assuming we could say it passed, and so if that is what was approved tonight, we could communicate to the neighborhood that it's basically we're looking at other alternatives for traffic calming on that block, and that if you know, something else will be proposed, or we would come back and do the speed hump next year. Is that kind of within the bounds of the program? You're not feeling like you'd have to sort of, neighbors wouldn't have to start over, I guess, is my question. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. So I think if that's decided here, we can do that. I don't think we've done that before, but
yeah.
We wouldn't make them go through the process again and reapprove it. It's been approved, so if we decide to hold off for a year, I think that's something we could do.
And we could get an update here sometime in the fall or something saying, hey, this is what we've looked into, here are the other options, and make a decision so that it's already in the hopper for next year one way or the other.
Yeah.
And you're going to answer, yeah.
Chuck.
And I'll just check if I got this timing right, Drew. There's an updated transit development plan underway. It will look at the bus stop spacing standards that was in the last approved transit development plan that was used by this commission or the Transit and Parking Commission when we last dealt with the bus stop issue in Jennifer. Now, those standards, we have been successful on Johnson and Gorham. We have been successful on Monroe. We have been successful on Turner. So that updated plan that will come through to you and to the policy board will be helpful if we revisit Jennifer.
Okay, so that what you're saying is basically Grant's request to have the TPBB look at this will happen through the transit development plan.
Yes.
Okay.
And Chuck, you're the answer to Chris's question about what would Metro's feelings be about the two on the one block and potentially nothing east of Dickinson? Is that still within, it's still two instead of three, which is better than three, not as good as one or zero?
That's correct.
Okay, Mike.
You know, I have a question. I guess it's not something to be decided tonight or necessarily answered tonight, but when we're talking about the traffic calming devices, whether it's the speed humps, the traffic circles, it seems those are all geared towards slowing down vehicles of any size. And when we're talking about Spade Street, where I would have to think predominantly we're dealing with passenger cars. Are there any things like that would have a very minor impact on buses, like rumble strips, that when passenger vehicles go over them, they really would feel them slow down, you know, like the rumble strips we see before stop signs to alert people there's a stop sign coming up, that when a passenger vehicle went over them, it would cause the driver to have pause or maybe to wake up and realize they're going faster than they should be. But a metro bus could go over them with relatively no difficulty at all.
They do make speed humps that have cutouts in them that are spaced wide enough that fire trucks can go over them and make it through those cutouts, but because the passenger vehicles are narrower, they have to go over part of the speed hump. We looked at that, but I think metro buses, because of their, I think, dual wheels in the rear, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, I think our inner track between the inside the two duals on, you know, right and left, I think that's narrower than the fire trucks is.
Yeah.
So we end up being more, the rear axle ends up being more like a car's width in there.
That's a great comment about the fire trucks. So police and fire don't have any issues with speed humps?
No, they do.
I bet they do, yeah. So do they get to weigh in on this?
Yeah, yep.
And they have?
Yeah.
Okay. Bill.
That's why I like Grant's idea about sending this back, or asking policy to take a look at this, because it's my recollection that in these proposals for traffic calming is that fire, if they oppose, it's like a showstopper.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom, basically, if they say, no, we can't tolerate that with our equipment, it's a fire.
Yeah.
And yet Monroe Street has them, which is interesting. Or they have tables.
They have tables.
So they didn't oppose this one. Fire did.
Right.
But I think it would be worth for policy to take a look at, is there, if fire has some showstoppers, in other words, they say we can't tolerate speed humps on certain, you know, they say just we make too many runs on that street. I think, you know, should Metro have the same kind of, you know, concerns that the policy should address, and you know, it should be, you know, maybe that policy needs to be looked at again citywide.
Yeah, so that might be a little different. Were you talking about bus stop placements?
I was in mind.
Yeah.
You were talking about bus stops?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about speed humps. No.
So this would be something different for the policy board.
I did actually say, so the overall traffic management program or traffic calming program, mm-hmm. I would also like to take a look at.
Again, we're off pressure.
Very channelized right now. It's like, do you want speed humps or not? And it doesn't necessarily look at the breadth, I don't think.
Okay, so where are we, Grant?
So I would move that we recommend proceeding with the two humps between Baldwin and Dickinson and holding on the one east of Dickinson to evaluate an alternative traffic calming. The two that specifically looking at a four-way stop at Dickinson Spade and looking at street narrowing.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. So what I have is that there's a motion that we proceed with the two speed humps between Baldwin and Dickinson and hold until next year, or just hold indefinitely?
Hold until the other alternatives are evaluated.
Okay. Hold on the speed hump east of Dickinson until other traffic calming measures can be investigated. Is that fair?
Point of clarification. Grant, I beg your pardon? Specific point of clarification. So Grant, were you specifically saying that the two alternatives that should be evaluated are the four-way stop and street narrowing, or that the alternatives for traffic calming should include those two? Okay, so not limited, but including.
Okay, so traffic calming measures can be investigated, including four-way stop and
street narrowing.
Street narrowing. Thank you.
Included, but not limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Including but not limited to. That's a great legal term, by the way. Okay, so there's a motion that we proceed with the two speed humps between Baldwin and Dickinson and hold on the speed hump east of Dickinson until other traffic calming measures can be investigated to include but not limited to four-way stop and street narrowing. Did I get that right? Gary?
Yes. Some of you might recall I voted no on the whole package, this particular
yes.
traffic calming and speed humps. As I alluded to before, I'm not against speed humps. In fact, I think one of the first speed humps was put in when I was an alder on Manitou Way and then shortly thereafter Yuma Drive. So I understand what neighborhoods, you know, are concerns about and implementing this. I frankly would support just going back and looking at the whole that area one more time, sort of in line with Grant is talking about, but not putting in any speed humps at this juncture. And then secondly, I obviously support some policy review by the policy board on this to give us and others guidance as to this program. So I will not support this motion, and I will be voting no. Thank you.
Okay. Other thoughts?
I think what Gary's talking about makes a lot of sense for looking at this in a broader context. You know, your comment, Grant, about this being channelized and how there's a very specific process for one block to decide that we want speed humps on one block without taking into account a larger context of a route is problematic. And so if we're talking about a deferral of this specific traffic calming east of Dickinson, you know, maybe a deferral is appropriate for all three of them until that whole process can be, you know, I think at the end of the day, this is one block, but I do have a concern about the larger issue of speed humps coming in block by block on a metro route where that it's really not it may not be an appropriate measure for that overall route. So I guess I would support Gary's. If you were to move it, I think that makes sense.
Well, we'll let this motion.
Okay.
So there's a motion on the table. Other comments or discussion with regard to the motion?
Bridget? I just have a question, I guess. These are speed humps. They're asphalt speed humps. If they go in, they can come out. They're concrete or asphalt. I mean, it doesn't mean that things can't change. I guess I would just say so there could still be a study about greater corridor, even with some of the speed humps going in, which would essentially allow the city to still follow through with what the expectation is of the citizens, at least to some extent. I mean, am I wrong on that, or? I guess
what are the standards, Tom, for these speed humps that we're currently installing?
The specification?
Are they concrete?
They're concrete, yep. So they cut them into the asphalt. And the reason they're concrete is because it's easier to form the concrete exactly how they want it for the slope of the speed hump and the height. So they cost about $6,000 a piece. So they can be, I guess the bigger issue with taking speed humps out is just the resident reaction to that. So it would kind of be like going through the process again of disapproval of the speed humps. So
can we infer from that if the possibility is that we might have to take them out later, it might be better to wait and study it more than to put them in and take them out?
I would not recommend putting them in with the chance of taking them out.
Wouldn't make much sense. I understand, yes. So other comments? So we have a motion on the table to proceed with the two humps between Baldwin and Dickinson, hold on the speed hump east of Dickinson until the traffic calming measures can be investigated, including but not limited to a four-way stop and street narrowing. Other discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, were you clear on that? Do you want to do a roll call?
No.
I'm no as well.
And Bridget, was there actually a second?
Building.
Oh, okay, thanks.
So we have three no's and one, two, three, four
yeses.
So that means the motion carries.
We don't need five.
No, we just need.
She didn't vote. She can't vote.
Yeah.
She won't.
But don't we have a nine-member body?
We'll need.
You just need a simple majority, I believe. I don't think this would be a two-thirds or
no,
anything.
But I think it's a majority of a body, not a majority of those present.
But I'm not a voting member. I only vote if there's a tie.
I don't know if any. We're a nine-member body. I'm pretty sure anything needs five votes to pass.
You have quorum with five people.
Yeah, five is a quorum. So if there's only five here, I don't need all five to pass.
You don't think so?
That's not.
Sure, we could. I mean, if there's only five people here. Yeah. I mean, we can. I mean, I believe the motion carried. We can double check that with the city attorney's office. You know. Oh, we have somebody from the city attorney's office here. Can you help us with this, Amber? I know this isn't your thing, but. Okay. Right. And then if the chair is not voting unless there's a tie, so if we have four yeses and three noes, it would. I don't believe so. We follow Robert's rules. So our special rules don't have anything in them with regard to that. So if you could just double check what the rules are.
So I'm new to this, but I was reading it recently, and I think it's a majority of those present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since I only vote if there's a tie, you know, 4-3 would carry the motion, I believe. But we'll verify that. Okay.
In attendance.
I beg your pardon?
Members in attendance.
Yep.
In the handbook.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Okay. So, that passed unless Amber tells us it didn't, when she does her research. We'll reconsider. Okay.
Discuss as far as sending something to the policy board?
Sure. So, what I had written down was the bus stop, standard bus stop intervals was something that was going to be looked at. But then I also have a second thing, which is to look at Metro's concerns with regard to traffic calming. And I think that echoes what you were talking about, Jessica, which is that planning street by street doesn't make a whole lot of sense. if you're, you know, if we look at each street in isolation, it doesn't make a lot of sense because the metro route clearly is a lot of streets all connected. So somehow we have to take that into consideration when we're looking at traffic calming. So, Grant, we'll have to figure out how to word that, but that's what I've captured as two thoughts that we would raise as issues with the policy board. Does that fit with what you're saying?
I'm not sure exactly I think this issue of who's the stakeholder is one of the big issues. So speed humps, people that live right there get to decide. People that are riding the bus don't get to decide. So I think that's one of the big issues with it. And then the other one is we have a separate program for speed humps versus other kinds of interventions. Don't have that voting process or anything like it. And then I think the third question of looking at sort of neighborhoods rather than just one block at a time. Because,
right.
I mean, there's a very good chance when these go in, people are going to go one more block south on Baldwin and use Routledge instead. So, I mean, and traffic engineering knows that does happen. But
I'm also interested in the fire. You know, I know that it seems like fire has like beetle power almost on speed humps.
Hope you're getting all this, Patrick.
So that would be
finding out what the
is that in the policy?
And just to add, had we been adamant at the beginning, we may not be here right now.
Yeah.
So we own a little of that responsibility, to be clear.
So we should make sure that Metro and Police and Fire all have, their voices heard at the beginning of the traffic calming process. But also remember that there's a presentation on the whole traffic, the whole toolbox that traffic engineering has that Yang and his group have been working on that's going to come to us. So that'll be a great opportunity for us to look at everything that, as Tom was talking earlier, that's in the toolbox. So that's a presentation that we want to make sure we have a large block of time available to talk about. And some of these issues can come up and be discussed at that point as well.
I have one other question,
yes.
Too. If I remember correctly, when this was originally approved, it does come to the commission as a package of speed hump approvals, correct? So, I mean, it would be, that doesn't preclude us from saying we made motion to, you know, do this one, but not this one. But
correct.
In terms of the process, it doesn't come before this committee as three separate agenda items. It comes as one agenda item for we're going to do, you know, these five speed hump projects in different areas. And maybe there's, maybe it would be helpful to have those broken out as more stuff. You know, maybe that would also aid in considering the impacts for Metro if they don't come as one big package, but as kind of separate decision points. I mean, obviously that's something that we can do too, to say, you know, our motion is to exclude one or the other, but I think that's a little messier maybe than looking at each of them individually in the context of the neighborhood.
And I think that gets back to Grant's point, which is we have a different process for traffic signals. We have a different process for speed humps. We don't have one process that all of these measures go through. So that's likely more of a policy issue, and one that we're going to talk about at our joint meeting as we talk about what changes might, I imagine that's going to come up as we talk about what changes we might want to see. So these are all great conversations that we can perhaps have some discussion about at our joint meeting as well. Okay, so unless we hear differently from Amber, we passed a revised plan for the speed humps on State Street.
Just say one more thing. This is just a give Tom a lot of credit here. He's very timely on getting these things out.
Okay.
And so it's not on Tom at all. I just want to make sure that is heard. And then I also want to thank all the commission members for the discussion.
Yeah. And what you heard tonight is that Metro should not be shy about talking about issues that impact bus route performance.
Exactly.
So, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So, we appreciate that. Okay. Anything else on Spate? Okay. All right. So, next we have reconsideration of the Lake Point Drive speed hump.
Chair, Madam Chair.
That
Alder Carter is here.
Yes. Would you like to join us at the table, please? Maybe identify yourself for those who may not know you.
I didn't hear you.
Then maybe identify yourself for those watching on the video.
I'm Alder Sherry Carter, District 14.
Okay. And I understand you wanted to talk about reconsidering the speed humps on Lake Point Drive.
Yes.
Okay.
You want me to start?
Please.
Yeah, so I had a meeting with the neighborhood on May 28th, I believe. I'll look it up while I'm still talking. Yes, on May 28th regarding traffic concerns. They had a variety of concerns about Lake Point Drive, and the compromise was that parking is at a shortage because, as you know, there's absolutely no parking on Lake Point Drive. So we wanted the speed bumps at Hoboken, between Lake Point Drive, Hoboken, and Fayette, and then on Bridge and Hoboken, we are going to actually allow parking for the first time on that street to alleviate some of the side streets that are getting parking from people that are visiting or even living on Lake Point.
Okay, so do you have a picture that we can show of this one so that we can, are we going to show, are you asking? I have it in my packet, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page with what we're being asked to reconsider. Having learned from the last one, it's nice to have visuals so we can look at it and say, okay, we want this to stay, we want this one to go.
Nothing's better than a visual.
Yes.
Quick question. While you're pulling that up, is Bridge a continuation of Lake Point Drive?
Bridge is a T, Lake Point Drive. So Bridge is here, Lake Point Drive is here. It's a T.
Okay.
So it borders.
On our map? Okay, so it's just not on the...
It's
I don't
not
think it's on our map.
Bridge is our dividing street between Madison and Monona.
Okay, so what is different on this map that you're proposing?
The only thing we're going to do is eliminate the speed bump that is in front of 1909 and 1910.
Okay, so the one on the far right of the screen, correct? So let me just...
Correct.
And this is at, sorry, get back to the mic. So this is at the request of the neighbors.
Right. So I held a neighborhood meeting on May 28th, and this is exactly what we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It was a robust discussion, and we came up with a compromise that satisfied not only the lack of parking, but also allowed for the two speed bumps.
Okay. Great. And Metro have any... feedback on this one at all?
or Route 12 would benefit from the removal of that speed bump. So that would help us.
And I should point out that at Hoboken there are stop signs, so that's not shown on this map, but there's stop signs on Lake Point Drive at Hoboken. So, traffic stops. It's kind of like almost two separate speed hump projects. There's the two speed humps between Fayette and Hoboken, and then the one east of Hoboken, because traffic has to stop at Hoboken anyway.
Okay.
And there's buses east of Hoboken, but no buses west of Hoboken.
Okay. Okay, comments or questions from commissioners? For willing, want to consider this change? Is someone willing to make a motion?
Make a motion. We eliminate the speed hump that's set on Lake Point Drive in front of 1910-1909.
A second. Motion.
Okay, there's a motion and a second to eliminate the speed hump that's in front of that's on Lake Point Drive in front of 1909 and 1910. Discussion. Yeah, and there was a motion and a second, correct? Discussion. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Now you're wishing we had that one first, huh? Okay. All right. Next we have a presentation. This is part of our training program. Thank you, Tom. And thank you, Alder Carter, for coming. And thank you, Drew, wherever the heck Drew went. Oh, thank you, Drew.
He wants to stay for the Legistar presentation.
Okay. All right. So as part of our training effort in our handbook, Lisa Veldren agreed to come and give us some online Legistar training. And I must admit I was a fan of having this be our first topic because I really need some help and tooling around in Legistar efficiently. So very much appreciate you coming, Lisa. Does everybody have a copy of the handout in front of them? That's on the screen.
Okay, well, thank you for inviting me to come to talk about Legistar online. Typically, I hold these types of presentations internally for city staff, but it was nice to be invited to come and speak to a committee or commission, so thank you. Legistar is part of a suite of products offered by the parent company called Granicus. The City of Madison has been using Legistar since 2005. It's a database. Prior to that, if you had questions about legislation, you wanted a copy of a resolution or an ordinance, or you wanted minutes or past agendas of committees, you'd have to contact the city clerk's office that kept everything in paper. And there was a lot of requests for those, and so we looked for a product that was easily accessible online. We had an RFP done, and at the time, Legistar was the product that we chose. Legistar is used by city staff to create your agendas, your minutes, resolutions, ordinances, reports, and other various miscellaneous files, and they're all publicly available online. Legistar is used by the Madison Metropolitan School District, Dane County, the cities of Waukesha, Milwaukee, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Miami, and several other cities around the country. Our main site is called the Legislative Information Center. This is where you would log in or just click on. And what's on this page is you can find the official weekly meeting schedule that the clerk's office posts, the Legistar calendar that for all the committees that are in Legistar, legislation you can look up. You can look up members on committees. You can look up the council agenda packet is linked there. The government resource guide is linked there. The information on how to apply to serve on a city committee, commissioner, board is linked there. Also, there's a site called Current Members Training and Support that has a variety of information for different committee members. If you're interested in looking at that, please go there. And, of course, a link to our mass and general ordinances. Legistar Online has various tabs, and that includes the legislation tab, the meetings tab, common council tab, which lists all our committee, our current council members, past and present, boards, commissions, and committees, and members, which include all of you. Meetings, when you click on that, you can bring up a list of all Lake Transportation Commission meetings for the year, the month, the week, whatever. Or you can just say all committees, commissions, and boards if you'd like to look at them. You can do it in a list view, but you can also do it in, there's a tab that's called calendar view that will show you the whole calendar for, say, the week of what committees are meeting that week. Before 2005, I like to say we did everything.
Could you go back so you can export that to Excel? If you go back a slide.
Oh, yes. In most of the functions in Legistar, when you're in there, you can export a lot of things into an Excel file or as a PDF or Word. To me, the PDF and Word are kind of wonky looking, so I like to export my things as an Excel file because then I can manipulate it as I want it. Mm-hmm. I'll show you that when we go to the site.
Thanks.
Like I said, before 2005, everything was in file cabinets. Today, we want everything in Legistar in the database. That was one of the things when I talked to new staff is I said, think of the Legistar database as our file cabinet. So everything we used to keep as files, that includes attachments, things that are distributed at your meetings, that goes into Legistar. So what we want is if what's ever happening at your meeting, we want that information to be in Legistar as well, so the public also has access to it. So you may get these handouts ahead of time, but if you have somebody come and says, oh, here, I'm going to pass this out, you're going to want to have staff make sure that they scan that and attach it as a PDF. So there's a record of it, and it's publicly available. Mm-hmm. When you're searching for legislative files, you can do a simple search, but I highly suggest to people to skip that part and go right to the advanced search. That is where you can tweak what you really want to find. There's a lot more that you can, it's a much more robust feature to search for things. And sometimes I even use this instead of the internal database because I'm able to set up different parameters. Like I want between this and this meeting, I want that sponsor, I know it's an ordinance, so I'm able to find things even, I think, more online than I am internally.
And you'll show us this later?
Oh, sure.
Excellent. Great.
Legistar tips, these are just a couple. When you first go into Legistar and you're starting to search, or you're bringing up, like, let's say the weekly meeting, like you, all your committee meetings for Transportation Commission, you get out of there. The next time you go back in, you're like, oh, I can't figure this out. This is bringing up the same. It's because Legistar remembers where you left off. And so I get a lot of calls from people that are searching, like, legislation, and they're like, I just can't, it's not coming up for me. And I'm like, well, did you clear everything out? Because Legistar remembers. It'll take you right back where you were before. Today I was just looking at Transportation Commission meetings for 2019. I got out of it, came back, and it's still stuck there. So I have to always change those search functions to do a new search. Non-Legistar meetings, most of our committees that are in Legistar are created by resolution or ordinance, and that's how they get into Legistar. If you're creating a subcommittee of your group, say three people are going to, you're going to appoint three people to do a subcommittee, those are not in Legistar, and so we call those additional meetings. If you ever go to the clerk's website, you'll see something that's called additional meetings. Those are actually all archived in online, so you can do a search. Let's say you know this meeting happened maybe a couple of months ago, and you can do the parameters, but you'll have to manually search through that list to find that agenda. Not everybody sends their minutes to the clerk electronically for those, so typically they're not posted, which means you're going to need to know who the staff person is in order to get those minutes. They're usually stored by whoever's staffing those subgroups of subcommittees or ad hocs or whatever. And then lastly, if you have questions, feel free to contact me if it's a Legistar thing. If it's about committee membership or how to apply, you need to contact Lila DaCosta in the mayor's office. So with that, I'll just go in and bring, and it was nice of them to bring up the Legistar thing here. So when we look at Legistar, this is the information center, as I said before. That's where you can find a lot of different things happening on that page. If there's a specific question, I'm more than happy to click around and we can see. Ann, did you have a question?
Well, I had to, like, the special rules subcommittee, that's not in Legistar.
Right.
Because it wasn't created by an ordinance. So we contact Patrick for things like that. But there was a TPC subcommittee that I was looking for some stuff on from, like, 2016. The only way I found that one was because I had a ledge file number. And so those seem to be like magic if you have a ledge file number.
Right? So, and it depends if we went to all years. Just so you know, you're going to see in the beginning all the current committees that are active. You scroll down to say, what is it? Zoning Board of Appeals is the last one. That's where you're going to find all these committees that are archived now. They're done.
Mm-hmm.
So you will find them there. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think. Do you remember the name of that, Anne?
It was a long name. But I think, I guess the point is that advanced search feature seems like it would be something that could help, because it was a parking subcommittee and it was meeting in November of 2016. So the idea of having those search features is great. And I think
the
main reason we're talking about this is, I mean, you know, Grant and Chris both have laptops with them. You guys aren't looking at paper stuff. You're looking at it online. And a lot more people are choosing to do that. So if we choose to look at them online, you know, Patrick loads everything into Legistar for our meeting. So if if that's our choice, then we know how to go out there and find things. Or if you want to watch a meeting that I remember the public hearing that we had on paratransit. I was gone for that meeting because I was teaching a couple of years ago on the TPC, and I wanted to watch that meeting. So you go into Legistar, you find that meeting, and then you can click on it and you can watch that meeting. So for some of you folks, this is, a repeat of things that you know. But it's really an excellent tool because, like Lisa said, it's the file box, the electronic file cabinet of every piece of information on our commission.
And I do want to caution because I do hear a lot of frustration with the online portal. I was in D.C. in May. They had a Granica summit, and so I was talking to someone about the online Legistar, and I said, we're not always happy with it because it's not very intuitive. It takes a lot of work to tell people how to find things. And he's like, well, funny you should say that because we're right in the middle of revamping that whole web portal. So I don't know what that means, other than I suspect they got a lot of feedback on that. As you can see, there's a lot of major cities that use it. I'm sure a lot of their public also uses Legistar to find things. So I think they were getting a lot of pushback about how it's not very intuitive, and it isn't. It takes a lot, I think, on the part of the public to try to figure out where to go. I mean, I think the basics of finding an agenda, the minutes, and doing a search for legislation, but I think what we run into is where are those little subgroups and where is that information? And I think it's not a clear process for staff. I have staffed a lot of subcommittees of at the time, CCOC, mm-hmm. And so I typically would, when I would do my agenda, I would actually attach all those PDFs that went to it because they weren't searchable in Legistar. Mm-hmm. But if you went into the additional meetings and you brought up my agenda, you would see all those attachments, all those PDFs. So it was like having Legistar in a sense, but it was available to the public.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the main driver of anything that we do with agendas and minutes and legislative files and things that happen at committees is making sure that whatever happens here, whatever materials you're using, also are available to the public. Mm-hmm. And also for you to, if you have to go back and look for something,
yeah.
A lot easier.
And it is a little confusing. Did you say that TFOGS is just like one big?
Well, what they
can you show people that? Because
I'm going to just show you an example of my Common Council Executive Committee agenda. So typically what I do is we have a lot of updates and discussion items. So I'll create a legislative file, and then I will attach the PDF to that, whatever I was handing out at the meeting. But when I'm publishing my agenda, that's what my committee members are using. So they don't have to click on the file ID number necessarily to get to that attachment because I've already published it with the attachment. Uh-huh. So you're not having to click twice.
I see.
Click once.
Yeah. That's one thing I'm a little frustrated. If you go into some of those files, you've got like a million documents in there, and it's really hard to tell what's the most current thing that you're looking at. And, you have to sort of like look at each one and click.
And I try to date my, if I have several attachments, I try to date them, particularly if there's different drafts. So let's say a committee takes up one draft
one meeting, then they get a next draft for the next meeting. So I'm dating those. So
I don't think everybody does. So
no, they probably don't.
Yeah. So those might you. I don't know if anybody else has noticed that you might pull up a ledge file and try and look at it and go, well, what the heck is the most current thing that I'm supposed to be looking at?
So I'll just bring up a TFOG's agenda. So they have all of their stuff. Well, this is not a good agenda to look at. Let's look at this one. Hopefully they'll show it. So as you can see, they're not creating legislative files for each of their items to attach those documents. What they're doing is they've created one legislative file.
Ooh.
Related to TFOGs. So as you can see,
that's what I was talking about. See, look at all that stuff. You know, what's the most current thing and how do you wade through that? So that's one of my most frustrating things in Legistar is, you know, finding one of those and going, whoa.
Well, and I think that's part of that's a staffing decision. It's not a Legistar decision. I mean, Legistar only does what you put into it. So if I have a large committee or a committee with a lot of things, I'm not creating one legislative file and dumping everything in there. I'm creating individual legislative files and attaching it because I'll tell you why. When you're doing a search in Legistar for something, it's a lot easier to have one legislative file than a big one like this and dumping everything in. You can, in Legistar Online, you can search attachments. So if you kind of knew the name of the attachment, you could technically put that in there and see if something popped up. But I advise not to do this because I think in the long run, if, let's say, 5 or 10 years from now, I don't know if we'll still have Legistar, but if we do, it's a lot easier to query an individual legislative file on a specific thing than something with a ton of attachments. So, you know, those are things that are discussed by committees. They just, you know, they say that's how we want to do it. Maybe that's what they decided. Personally, I don't like it. I like to be able to create a legislative file, say what it is, do the attachments, because I know if I have to go back and find that record, it's going to be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. So are people using Legistar? I imagine Alders do all the time. Yeah, you have to, right? Yeah. I mean, I find it to be a really helpful way to figure out what's current and what's going on. So I think it's important that we know how to move around in it, and it's really important if we miss a meeting and we want to go back and see what we missed in order to be able to go back and look.
And I do want to say play around with it because there is a lot of functionality. Like I said, that export button. Let's say it's the beginning of the year, I want a listing of all the Transportation Commission meetings. I'm going to export it to Excel. Let's see if it opens it up. Whatever. Okay.
Oh, sure enough.
And so it lists it. It's kind of clunky, but I mean, like the.
And you just have to format it, right?
And then you can just format it. And then you can do whatever you need to do with it. Like I said, I like using Excel spreadsheet for these because it's easier to manipulate. But there's export buttons on quite a few things. You can export legislation. So if I was doing... And I want to see everything this year that has been about Judge Doyle Square. Mm-hmm. All kinds of files that could be resolutions, it could be ordinances, it could be discussion items, it could be miscellaneous files. So this will bring up everything on Judge Doyle Square. Then again, I can export that to an Excel file, save it for whatever. So what I'd like to just say is just play around with it, see what kind of different functionality is in there that you can use. I just kind of quickly shared with you, you know, just a few things.
Okay. Questions for Lisa? And I think the big resource that we now have is Lisa. So if you're, you know, trying to do something in Legistar and you can't figure out how to do it, that's the best time to contact her when you have those questions or those exams.
Correct.
Yeah. So great. And we've checked off one of our trainings now.
Yay. And if you want to send me any feedback about this presentation, because mm-hmm. I think there will probably be, now that I've done it for you, will probably be some interest for other committees to also do something like this. I'd appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming. Any other questions for Lisa? Gary?
You still have my old stuff? Or is that still on Papyrus?
No, actually, if you're still in Legistar, so we could look up Gary.
You don't want to.
And see all the legislation he sponsored.
Okay.
On the council. And if you are a member and you were an elected official, yeah. All of that information follows you in that members tab. So you can see all the committees you've served on, you know, really? When those ended, when they started.
I have to look myself
and
up.
That is great because there's times when we get calls from not only staff but people going, you know, I want to know, I served in the 70s, and I want to know what committees I served on. And I'm like, well, you know, believe me, that would take a long time to go back because we'd have to go search those in the proceedings and find each individual appointment report. And no, but with Legistar, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, great. Now I say I didn't know if you could do that. All right, any other comments or questions? All right, thank you so much for coming.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, so next we have a report from the Special Rules Subcommittee. So, Gary, if you want to maybe talk about the minutes, and we're going to give you a little demo here.
Basically, we wanted to get a demonstration of some of the online features. And I think immediately we came into the issue of who is this really for, whether it's for, you know, the benefit of members or is it open to the public? Well, it obviously will be open to the public, but, you know, I think some of us thought this was more of a training tool to make commissioners better commissioners. And so we have these fine folks that were trying to guide us through that.
So there's copies of the minutes from the last meeting, but then there's also a summary of the Transportation Commission webpage. And you will be really excited. I was really excited to see. This is live. So if you go out to the City of Madison Department of Transportation and then see the commission tab right there, you click on that, and there we are.
Voila.
We're live, the Transportation Commission. So there's a summary that I worked with John Strange on, and then you can go down and you can see there's Legistar, so it shows when the meetings are, who the members are. Over to the right is contacts. Yang's there and I'm there. So the current chair and the contact, whether it's Chuck or Yang or Sabrina, will be shown there. And then we have another page that is in process, which is the, oh, I'm sorry. We should click on the handbook, and the work plan will be accessible from this homepage. The handbook, remember we approved the handbook, but we said we were going to do some standard formatting because we had a couple different people working on it, so the indentations were different in one section versus another. So We are in that process right now. John Strange is on vacation. When he's back, we'll finish that up. And then you'll be able to click on the handbook right there. And underneath it is the work plan. And Becky, if you could click, and thank you to Becky and thank you to Eric for helping us with this. So this is where the work plan is. And as we go through the year and update it, which we're going to do on a quarterly basis, it'll always be out here, easy access for all of us to find it. Okay? And then we also, as members of the commission, are obligated to do training. And we have a list of training topics in our handbook. So there's, you click on this, and there's a training information. It's not fully built out yet because some of the training hasn't been developed. But here are some of the links to the city attorney training on Robert's Rules, Code of Ethics, open meetings, public records. There's a couple of videos here that you can link. Madison in Motion is down there. Racial equity and I'm sorry, I have to find where we have. So racial equity and social justice initiative, there's a home page there. So our goal, if you could maybe click on that.
The racial
equity. Yeah, either one of those, or Madison in Motion, either one. So one of the things that you'll find, so this, there's a lot here. So to train yourself, this one isn't just a presentation on it. There's a lot of information out here, and you can go through this website and figure it out. And some of these, like Legistar, will have some presentations made on them so that we can understand them better. But if you think about how often you've gone someplace and the link is broken, it doesn't work anymore. That's very frustrating to people. So if you wouldn't mind going back to the site. So some of them are links to actual documents, and some of them are links to another site. Okay? And if it's like the Code of Ethics site at the city attorney, that's a site. And Mike May has the most current training posted there. Some of the ones up above are current presentations. And so you click on it, it'll take you right into a video, for example. So we had long conversations about how that's a little dangerous. It's very helpful for right now. So, you know, if you need training on this, it's right there and easy for you to get to. But what if they update it? What if this one isn't current anymore and they take it off the site? So, you know, might get a broken link, right? Mm-hmm. So what we'd like to try and do is link to sites and then have, there's a Legistar site on here that she was talking about, the committee, additional committee training. Try that one. Where is that one?
It's under the Legistar.
Yeah. So you can click on there and you can see this is where additional training and support is that Lisa was talking about. So the best and what we're going to try our best to do is link to sites like this so that we don't end up with broken links. There will be some, like our work plan and our handbook, those are our documents, and those will be direct postings here on our site because those we have control over and those will be posted. Most of the other ones probably won't be posted there, but you'll always be able to access them. Patrick can get them for you, Yang can get them for you, Chuck can get them for you. So that seems to be the direction that we're headed now. So right now you can go out there and this is what you can find. And we'd really like your feedback as to how is this going to work for everybody. You know, Chris is a new commission member. You know, it says in the handbook you've got 6 months to complete your training. Is this going to help you do that?
Our
conversation.
Yeah, and having this website where you can go in and click on stuff. So that's our goal. So if you're a new commission member, you can go here and you can find everything that you need. If you're an existing commission member and you want to go look at the handbook, it's right there. You don't have to go, oh, let's see, we approved that on June 12th, or how was it Lisa said we have to search for this stuff on Legistar? You know, it's always going to be right here where we can find it. So this is kind of a pilot for committees, boards, and commissions to have this kind of information available for its members. So, so as Eric and Becky said, this is different from what other committees, boards, and commissions have right now. So it's kind of moving into new ground a little bit, isn't it?
Well, we had a meeting, so we had some of our own concerns about doing this, and I think some of it was about the broken links and whatever, but there was also, we had a meeting today with IT, so we kind of made these changes based on our conversations last time. IT has reservations about how this is done, concerns about public information, commissioner information, is this the appropriate place to put it? But I think what has happened, what I think we had tried to do is start a larger conversation about how this could be handled. Is this the appropriate way? Is this the new way forward for all commissions? Or out of this, do we have another site that would become some of this information would go into another location? So yeah. What we had done and our intent from the last meeting was this is a temporary. We got everything you wanted up now. But long term, is this going to be the way it is? Maybe, maybe not. And that's a discussion between IT, maybe you folks, other commissions. So yeah, we've at least progressed the conversation.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric. So if you think about it, if, you know, you go into Legistar and you've got all these boards, committees, and commissions, so it might make more sense to have, like, in the Legistar place, you know, you click on the Transportation Commission, maybe you go to this site, you know, so that you can see all of this stuff right there. As opposed to having to go, oh, let's see, I have to go to the Department of Transportation to find the Transportation Commission, and I have to go over here to find the other one. So, you know, valid point that it should be, and Grant, you were talking about that, you know, maybe long term it should be more organized in a way that everything can be together. So we're sort of breaking new ground and trying to make the information that we need available to everybody, and everything is already on the city's website someplace. It's just really hard to find until you organize it like this into one web page. So thank you so much for helping us do this. You know, we'll continue to work on some of the training because we've got some that hasn't been developed yet. So we need to continue on with that, and we'll bring more of those presentations to this group as we do that and have more links to be able to put on the website. So, and we'll stay in touch and see what works best, with understanding that we'll try hard not to link to documents and try to link to sites so we don't end up with those broken links.
Yep, like I said, I think we've started a conversation that could not only help you folks but other commissions and boards as well. So
yeah. And that was, Rebecca Kemba wasn't able to be here, but, you know, she helped us start down this path. And that was one of the visions that she had, was let's try some of this stuff out. You know, the handbook was something that we're piloting. The web page is something that we're piloting. So we'll see where it goes. And we really very much appreciate your help with this. Other comments or questions from people?
I'll pray she go to Becky, that'll be clear.
Yeah. Yeah, so Becky did a great job with it.
Hey, Becky.
Yeah. Hey. Thank you guys very much, and thanks for staying through the speed hump discussion.
Yeah. It was illuminating.
Yeah. Okay. Next, we have taxi cab license renewal process presentation. So I have a couple of comments. First, I thought Keith Pollock was going to be back from vacation today so he could be here tonight. I think I was mistaken, and he's not back today. So he's not able to be here tonight. But why this is on the agenda is, you know, we had a long discussion when we had, everybody remembers the long discussion we had about the renewal of those licenses, and we had a lot of discussion about shouldn't we have deadlines in the ordinances, and, you know, why were these folks late, and what should we do about that, and should we change the ordinance, and could we do a 90-day extension? And we were told, no, we couldn't do a 90-day extension. So we had a lot of discussion about that. So I served on a taxi cab license denial appeal, and being a diligent subcommittee member, I pulled out the ordinance to read it, to remember, you know, what do you have to go through to apply for this, and ran across the license renewal section, and I found some deadlines in the ordinance. So talked with Amber McReynolds from the city attorney's office, and we had a good conversation, and she generated this memo for us. And the goal tonight is to talk about what's in the ordinance, and we'll talk. We all know what the current practice has been, which appears to be different from what's in the ordinance. And what do we want to do about that? You know, we are not the body that advises on, you know, and moves new ordinances along. That's the Transportation Policy and Planning Board. But we work with this ordinance, and if we see issues with that, we certainly could, you know, get some folks together and or ask staff to work on something that we could bring forward and ask Grant to and Chris to take to the policy board and say, hey, we've seen some issues in the current ordinance, and we'd like you to consider making some changes to it. So a little bit of a long intro, but that's why we're here with that tonight. So thanks. Sure.
So the information I provided basically just gives you the ordinance and clarifies that there are currently deadlines listed in the ordinance for these renewals that happen every 2 years. The taxi companies are supposed to submit applications before January 31st of the year that the license would expire, and then the Transportation Commission is supposed to recommend approval or denial in time for the council to act by April 30th. So this is obviously a time where the current practice and the ordinance have diverged at some point, and I mentioned in the email possible solutions are to either change the ordinance to match current practice, or I've spoken to Keith, and they have no objection to following the ordinance. I think it's just that over time it hasn't been followed. I don't know how long that's been. But for these particular applications that were just renewed, they should not be affected by this oversight. So there's nothing that we need to do now or change anything that's already been approved by the council. We're looking at 2 years from now, what would be happening.
Well, we would need quite a bit of time if
sure.
we're going to recommend an ordinance change. So.
Right, yeah. I guess to clarify, I'm saying I'm not recommending trying to go back and fix anything that has already been done, but to look forward.
Yeah. So thoughts about that. We had an extensive conversation about that, and, you know, there were some thoughts about TNCs and when we look at Uber and Lyft and, you know, how they're regulated versus how taxis, for example, are regulated. So that was one piece of the discussion. You know, is it fair to say that you need to have your license renewal in by January 31st when it doesn't come due till June? And if you don't get it in by then, you have to, you know, be treated like an initial application and you can't be treated like a renewal anymore, which is what the ordinance said. So the ordinance is pretty rigorous, I think. That's just my personal thought. So, you know, is that something that people think that the Transportation Commission should look at, or should we ask staff to look at it and bring some recommendations back to us, which we could look at and then ask be brought forward to the policy board if we think that it would be a good idea to change the regulation. So what are people's thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, I thought for, you know, I mentioned at our last meeting when this came up with the renewals and the fact that some of the information wasn't there, and there was discrepancies on some of the information that, you know, we attempted and not very, very rigorously to have maybe this whole ordinance looked at when we studied the Uber and Lyft situation, but it didn't take, and the taxi cab companies were more or less concerned about Uber and Lyft and not improving the ordinance. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, who should be the actor here? Who should look at this particular ordinance, because it does need to be reviewed, and whether it's the policy board, whether it's a city council member, this body, I'm not sure if you want to create another subcommittee to do this. I mean, there are options we can pursue, but I think it really should be looked at, and obviously with the advice and counsel of the city attorney's office, and hopefully the participation of all the cab companies, so they're the ones that have to comply, and if there are things in the ordinance that are difficult to do, then we should know about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who the actor is. I guess I think something needs to be looked at comprehensively, but I'm not sure which vehicle should do it.
Yeah. Grant.
Question for Gary. Other than the kind of issues that came up on the timelines this time, are there any things that stand out for you that really should be reviewed? I mean, you say that they definitely should be reviewed. Like, you were looking at it before? Were there things that seemed
for example, I was hoping to get the feedback from the companies, whether the whole scheme of two-year licensing, the deadlines, when do they get the information, just getting some more information from the people that are affected by the ordinance to maybe kind of respond to some legislative change. Maybe there isn't any that needs to be done. Maybe it just needs to be in-house and a little bit more stricter attention to what we already have, and that deadlines are deadlines, and if they're not going to be enforced, then probably do something with the ordinance to allow that. But maybe the deadlines are unrealistic because of something in the industry that, you know, maybe they add cabs on a weekly or monthly basis, and getting the exact VIN numbers is a problem for some reason. And insurance, okay, And I don't know. Again, I think there's something out there that could be improved here. I haven't really looked at it that carefully, and don't know who should do that.
On that last question or point about the challenges with meeting the timeline, I'm sort of assuming that our current practices, well, actually I shouldn't say, do we send out a notice saying, hey, it's, you know, October, and remember that on January 31st your renewals are done? We don't know if that's part of the current process or not.
Do you know from your conversation with Keith, and again, I apologize, I thought Keith was back today and would be here this evening to talk about our current practice. But my understanding is our current practice is to not hold them to that January deadline, because I'm not sure we knew about the January deadline in terms of staff. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
But I don't know about if notices go out or how that communication happens between the city and the companies.
Yeah.
I guess my recommendation would be to ask staff, traffic engineering and the staff that's, you know, running this program to, I think, reach out to the cab companies just for broad feedback about the program, the ordinance, and then come to us with a, you know, recommendation of either here's some edits we'd like to recommend, or here's some changes to our process that we're going to do to avoid the issue in the future, or just kind of some kind of report, and then I think we could take it from there, whether it, you know, needs a deeper dive or not.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And that could include if they see something that's causing them to be less competitive,
right,
than
exactly.
The TNT.
Anything I think could be on the table in terms of just any potential changes that they would want someone to look into. And then I think if that, based on what they said, I'm guessing we probably would want to have the Policy and Planning Board look into any changes to the ordinance.
So are you suggesting that it come to us first to talk about it?
I think so, because they might come back and said, actually, we think we're going to send out a reminder letter in the fall and hold everybody to the current things, and nobody else had anything they wanted to change. And if that's as simple as it is, I don't think the Policy Board needs to really deal with this.
Okay. So we'll ask staff to take a look at it and to touch base with the cab companies to see what changes might be desired or appropriate, and then come back to the Transportation Commission to discuss it first. And then if it does look like there might be some ordinance changes that we would like to suggest be recommended, then I could bring that forward to the Policy Board. Other thoughts? Yes.
I'm kind of curious, like our current ordinance, like how far does it date back? Like when was it originally put on our books? That's one question I have. And overall my philosophy, I was just hearing about the news where a TNC driver had pulled a gun on a couple in Wisconsin. I think it was in Waukesha. It's something that, as I look at the ordinances that we have for regulation of taxi cab companies, and if they do predate, largely the existence of TNCs,
mm-hmm.
I think for my philosophy is almost from a public safety perspective of doing what we can to advocate for these continued existence of the taxi cab companies, that we can regulate and we can have a higher degree of public safety.
Yeah. So it looks like this has been updated. Pieces of it have been updated quite a bit.
Right. I don't know overall when the full taxi ordinance, I see some 1997 dates in here, but piecemeal it's sort of been amended when needed. So I've taken it over maybe in the last couple of years, and I think there's only been one amendment or two amendments the last couple of years. One was to update on allowing GPS fares, and another was a minor detail about markings on cabs that the cab companies came to the city, asked for, and it was sponsored and adopted.
Well, we had talked about a major overhaul 3 years ago, Gary, or 4 years ago?
Maybe four years ago.
And then the state stepped in and said they were regulating TNCs. So the city didn't. So our work just kind of went. But we had a lot of people come in and, give us feedback at that subcommittee. So I think if staff asks them, they get a lot of good feedback from the cab companies. So it's been a while, I think, Mike.
Right. The city does have the authority to regulate taxi cabs, but not TNCs.
Right. Okay, so we'll have staff take a look, and we'll ask them to reach out to the cab companies for their feedback on the renewal process and the ordinance in general. Bring any changes in either procedures or potential ordinance changes back to us for discussion, and then we as a group can talk about them, and then ask it to be brought forward to the policy board if there are any ordinance changes. Okay, thank you, Amber. Any other comments or questions for Amber? Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, H4 topics and date for the joint Transportation Commission and Policy Board joint meeting. So Tuesday, August 27th from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock is what we have on our calendars right now. We had a meeting, as you know, you've seen our agenda topics, and we had like a really long list. Clearly that was too many. We had a long discussion about what we could potentially accomplish in a three-hour window of time. Budgets was one topic that we thought might be timely, but sounded like it needed to go to the policy board on a certain timetable, and so waiting for that joint meeting might not work. So what will likely happen there is the policy board will get the budget presentations so they can act on them as they need to, because they're the approving body for those budgets, according to the ordinance as it's written today. And then we'll get a presentation on the budgets once they're approved, so we know what we have to operate within as we implement. There was one standout topic, and we had it at the top of our list, and that was talking about the ordinance, talking about getting a review of what we have in the ordinance today. How has it worked now that we've been operating under the ordinances for a year now? What might we think needs to be changed? And an offshoot of that is, what are the responsibilities of the various bodies, the Transportation Commission versus the Transportation Policy and Planning Board versus city staff? And Board of Public Works and Plan Commission were also thrown in there as, you know, where do they fit in the process? As we look at projects like, you know, as we think about Wilson Street and Broome Street, as we had a lot of discussion about that interim recommendation and the corridor study that's going to be completed there. You know, the policy board versus the commission, where does the plan commission fit? Where does Board of Public Works fit? You know, how far along in design does a project have to be to have the geometric design brought to us to be approved? So all of those questions, we've all been talking about those things. And that's what we had an agenda meeting with. Grant was there as vice chair of the policy board, and Tom Wilson was there. I was there, and staff was there. And that is going to be our topic, because that's going to take us at least 3 hours to talk about. You know, to get a good sense of what is currently in the ordinances and what has our experience been over the past year, and some of the discussion that we've had about questions like, you know, we talked about it tonight. When you talk about traffic calming, we have all these different processes. You know, and our ordinance is very specific about what should come to the Transportation Commission. So is that how we think it should be, or do we think it should be different from that? So, Grant, you were at the meeting. What other thoughts do you have with regard to?
I think it's just a good time to check in on this, you know, very, very new committee structure. And I agree, focusing on that question of kind of what's the role of this body of DPDB, how do they interface? I think that's be a really good conversation, and it'd be nice to not feel rushed and trying to hurry through that conversation to get on to other things. So,
yeah.
And we can always have additional joint meetings in the future, I think.
We can, and there's nothing that says that we just have to have one. if we want to get together and continue the conversation, we can certainly schedule a second one or a third one or whatever is appropriate. So hopefully, and Patrick, we've got a quorum for the, so we'll have quorum for our group, a quorum for the policy board. We have that from both, so we should be a go for that date, correct? Okay, so other comments or questions about that?
August 22nd? Was
that August 27th?
Second?
Seventh.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And you should have an invitation from Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I put a penciled in something.
Okay. Oh, we had it on the 5th. We had it penciled in on the 5th, and then we got it. It got switched. Okay. Then, so I'm looking forward to that. It should be a very interesting meeting. And H5, our warm weather tour is set on September 10th at 2 o'clock. Meeting at the State Street Capitol Garage may last up to 2 hours. So I think Patrick has it set at 2 hours now, just in case. We're going to start in the garage, and then we're going to go, is it a traffic signal, I think, near there? I'm not exactly sure where. Any comments or questions about that? And if by chance that date and time does not work for you, we can certainly schedule a second one for a different date. Announcements from the chair. We have another taxicab license denial appeal hearing. Ken has agreed to chair it. Yay. And Mike and myself have agreed to serve on it. And we're looking to get a schedule sometime the first 2 weeks in August. So this is the third one we've had in the past few months.
We've had one for about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, this is the third one we've had.
Yeah.
So we have that. We also have had a request for a public hearing on our August 14th meeting, which I believe, Patrick, you've sent a notice out already to the newspaper. To add the 400 and 500 blocks of Virginia Terrace to the residential parking permit program. So that public hearing would be at 6 o'clock on August the 14th. And also, if you'll see down at the bottom of the agenda, there's a note for you. There's a public information meeting on bus rapid transit on August 29th. From 6 to 7:30 at the Madison Senior Center. And so we will have, at least we have tentatively scheduled at our next meeting after that on September 11th for David to come, excuse me, and give us an update on BRT after that public information meeting. But you're encouraged to attend. So Chuck, anything else on that? So other future agenda items.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Question. We asked the Assistant City Attorney McReynolds to look up our voting on that particular.
Oh, yes.
Would you share with the committee?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. I should have asked that before she left. It's a majority of those in attendance, as long as it's not less than a majority of the quorum who's in attendance. So we had... So we had 4 and 3, and so there's 8 of us here, but I'm non-voting because I only vote if there's a tie. So 4 to 3 was...
that means you're not in attendance?
I beg your pardon?
You're not in attendance in that case? How does that work?
I wouldn't count unless there's a tie. And that's in City 3301. It clearly spells out that chairs, unless there's a special rule... And we don't have a special rule in that regard that the chair doesn't vote. You can't make motions or vote unless there's a tie. Okay? So it's a majority of those in attendance. So I wouldn't count in that unless there's a tie. That makes sense? And I did make a note, so I'll talk with...
It says the majority of members.
Uh-huh.
So that seems a little confusing.
But not all members come to every meeting.
Of members present.
Yes. And I did
it
make...
It seems like it would include you.
It actually says members in attendance.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what that's the distinction?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I made a note that I'll just get that clarified. And if that's something we want to clarify in the handbook, because it came up tonight, I'll talk to John about that. And I'll take a look at that.
Yeah, I brought it up when we were reviewing the handbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe a little bit of language was added to clarify it, because this issue is common
in
voting bodies. So.
Yeah. I'll take a look back at it, but Amber confirmed that what we did tonight and the fact that we said that it passed was correct. But I'll take a look at it and talk about the specific situation with John Strange when he's back and look at how we have it in our handbook just to make sure if there's a way we can make it more clear that we do. And particularly with regard, does the chair count as an attendance? Because if that's the case, then it would have had to be five as opposed to. So, I'll follow up on that.
When you follow up, and could you just also get if that's somewhere in the ordinances as well? Because I was looking for a while and couldn't find any. I mean, I think for other bodies, make the question.
Yeah, I think it might be in Robert's rules, but I can double check with Amber to find out where she found it.
It'd just be good to get sort of the broader, like, here's. I mean, our handbook's one thing, but it'd be nice to know where it is in the ordinances.
Yeah, I think. Some of this stuff is in Robert's rules, and it just basically says in the ordinance that we follow Robert's rules. Make my notes neater when I get home. Okay, so, and we'll update the group. Okay. Any other comments on that? Okay, thanks. So in terms of other future agenda topics, we are scheduled on August 14th to have that discussion about Madison Police Department and traffic engineering quarterly traffic safety and what we would hope to have on that report. So that will be pretty lengthy. We do have some other metros. Annual financial statement audit report is scheduled for the 14th. Quarterly reports from Metro and parking are scheduled. We told the police department they didn't have to do the old report, that we want to talk about the going forward instead. So that's how we have it scheduled. Safe routes to school is potentially scheduled. We'll have to take a look and see. I mean, we have spent significant amount of time talking about that quarterly traffic safety report. So I want to make sure that we have adequate amount of time to have that good conversation. And I'm thinking we're going to need at least an hour to talk about that. Seriously. Yeah.
The other thing with that conversation is it may be one that is a kind of an overlap issue with the policy and planning board. So I think we could also, you know, we start that conversation here, but that might be something that if we do, you know, consider another joint meeting in the future, to me this is one where, you know, what are we actually trying to accomplish with this report? And as some of the conversations we started here seem to be kind of higher level policy kind of questions around how are we approaching safety and prioritizing interventions and all that sort of stuff. So I think we could just keep that in mind that it might be something that we're not even going to close up in one discussion here at this meeting.
Yeah. No, and that's true because Vision Zero, I mean, we said, okay, this is the policy that we're thinking about. If that's the case, then what kind of report is going to help us meet that goal of Vision Zero? So, you have to have the policy first before you can figure out what you want in the report. So, good point. So, that's a lot. I originally, since we have a meeting on August 27th, we would have another meeting scheduled on August 28th is our second regularly scheduled meeting of the month. Don't know if we'll have any referrals. If we end up not, I have a long list of things that, you know, we have on our list of things to talk about. So I guess it's up to you. Are you comfortable having two meetings in a row with a joint meeting on the 27th and a Transportation Commission meeting on the 28th if we have a need for it? That's a lot in 1 week. So my goal is to not have one so that we don't have to. We'll see, I guess, what the council has.
You're only meeting once.
Okay.
That's before the 14th.
Well, so we should be okay then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's my goal, to not have another one. And I think we'll have another meeting on September 11th and push everything off to that date. Okay. Anybody have any other topics for future agendas that we haven't talked about? That doesn't happen to show on the work plan or in our discussions? Everybody's tired. You want to go home?
I'm going to move adjournment.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.